Accession number 27237, Dr. Robert Nowarski, Reel 8. Reel 7.
Nice.
We were talking about your duties with the squadron, and we discussed sort of when you were escorting the bombers. What other sort of duties would you be on, and were there any that you could be on? Patrols, I presume.
Well, the other thing was when it came to patrols, it was mainly patrolling the shipping in the channel, and that was really quite boring. There was nothing really to.
So what was the purpose of
it? The purpose of it was that bombers from Germany or from they could come and attack the ships. With bombs, you see now, and so you would be patrolling over them to make sure that there was nobody would actually attack the ships. That was the purpose of patrolling backwards and forwards over the channel of the sort of shipping patrol, really.
Now, what about fighter sweeps? I mean,
now the fighter sweeps are different.
What were they for?
Yes. Now they were mainly. Well, not mainly. Usually, they were just to. There were so low flying missions, flying over virtually on very, very low, and at attacking aerodromes. And because usually there were sort of aircraft there on the aerodrome, and attacking the aircraft, shooting them up. And. Or attacking anything moving, say, on say when it came to trains, locomotives. If you saw anything moving, then you attacked it. You see, now these are usually fighter sweeps.
And what were they like? I mean, you'd fly much, much lower, I presume.
You would fly very low.
Would
yes,
you fly low over the channel as well, or would?
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
What was a typical fighter sweep? Like then.
Well, you were first of all you were told roughly what you want to do. You see, so now you were told that the actual route you want to take, and attack this aerodrome and this aerodrome, then come back again through this way, and that's really what you were supposed to do. You see, so you had to be pretty good at navigation first of all. Flying low, you see, you couldn't see sort of. Normally, if you fly at 10,000 feet, well, you can see that this is Northwood there, and this is London, and this is something else, you see, and so you know where you are in space. Not if you're flying at 10 or 15 or 20 meters high. Then of course, there's no. Everything whizzes past you very quickly. You'd be flying at about 250 to 260 knots, which is what about. Nearly 300 miles an hour, so these things would be passing very quickly. But you would know on your route that you were supposed to take. You would know of certain landmarks, and whether you ought to be say left of it or to right of it, and whether you were on the right track to get to your destination, say. Abbeville Airport or whatever, and then from there you see you might be going on to Saint-Omer Airport, and strafe the whatever there is anything on the ground there. You see, and you also had to make sure that you're not being jumped on by enemy fighters. Which you were not really, because by the time they, it was very very difficult for actually to spot you anyway. Very difficult to spot a low flying aircraft anyway. And you see, and that was when it came to sweeps like that. It wasn't. It was usually the a section of at the most four aircraft flying. And so it wouldn't be the whole squadron. Of 12 aircraft flying in one direction to say it would be sections of four, possibly two, one after another, so there's it wouldn't be a swarm of.
So difficult to say generally.
Well, exactly, it would be difficult to see anyway. Yes, yes, yes.
So the threat wasn't so much from other fight from German fighters; it was from.
Well, the threat actually was the threat was not from fighters usually, but from the ground. Because they were all there, they were all very heavily defended with ground fire. From
what types of ground fire? Was it anti-aircraft guns, or was it machine guns, or was it various things?
Machine guns, or a little guns. So
20
guns. That's right. Yes, yes, yes. There would be 20mm guns with the full force, whatever they were, 30mm.
The equivalent of both.
Yes, 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 yes. And so that was usually the.
Did you get much ground fire? What was it like?
Yes, you did. You would get a lot of ground fire, actually. Yes, yes, yes.
What was it like flying through it?
Well, you could actually, most of them, you could see the traces that they're going. You are just hoping that it isn't going to hit you. There's no. They had just. It was quite difficult for the Bakshi, I suppose, to hit you anyway, because by the time he could aim at you, you were already sort of 100 yards away from the same place from them before you were. That's why you flew very low, because the lower you were, the more difficult it would have been for the gunners or for anybody to spot you, or where you're coming from, where to look for you. Unless he was very lucky and you suddenly appeared there and he was actually already pointing the gun in that direction, you see there. But we did have losses actually on this. But usually we didn't like it all that much actually, because you couldn't. There was nothing you could do if you were fired at. There's nothing you could do about it. See, if you were in a dogfight, saying, "Well, if you saw the chap where he was, well, it didn't really worry you all that much, you see, because as long as you knew where the chap was, then you knew whether he can do anything to you or whether he can't do anything to you." Sorry.
Yeah. So, would you suffer many casualties from ground fire? Or
from ground fire. Yes, well, I mean, in comparison, I think we lost more aircraft during sort of fighter sweeps rather than during escorts. Certainly more, yes, yes.
And so, could you see the effect your fire was having at this? I mean, presumably you'd have the film on again.
But of course, every time you pressed you fired the guns. Guns, you were always taking a film, so there was always evidence of what you were aiming at.
Sort of targets would you hit when on a successful flight? Do you remember any particular target?
Yes, I remember a locomotive actually, which I hit, and that actually exploded. Not exploded, but it went. I don't know what I hit. They must have hit the boiler or whatever. You see, we really, really flew apart, and which actually showed very nicely on the photograph. And also, and I think that a bit later on, when actually we were dive bombing.
Is that in the next?
That was the next lot. Okay, yes, the next lot. Yes, 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 yes.
But presumably there'd be more dramatic sights doing this than in the air, where it was much more difficult to hit the target. Presumably it was easier to hit the stand.
It was, yes, of course it was easier. It was quite a bit easier to hit a train, you see, or anything, say, stationary things on the aerodrome, you see. Than it was during the actual dogfight.
Was your aircraft in this phase ever damaged by ground fire?
Oh, yes. Yes.
What sort of damage did you get?
Well, usually, well, you didn't really know until you came back, you see. Then you realized that you've collected few holes here and there, you see. You didn't even know that they were there. But luckily, you see, they were not from sort of 20mm things, because that would finish you off, you see. There were usually there were sort of 303 bullets, you see, from machine guns, which just went through it, and that was that. And you yourself were very well protected in a Spitfire.
In what?
Say, from behind, there was the armor plating from behind with the, to protect the back of your head, and right up to the seat, you see there, so that if you were hit from the thing, say with only 303, you wouldn't go through. And also from the front, you see where there's a bloody great big engine in front of you, nothing would go through it anyway. There, you see, there's no sideways. Of course, you could be hit, you see, but it would be very much more difficult to hit you sort of sideways, really, because even at the aerodrome, if the chap was trying to get you when you were from the side, you see, now you were moving so fast, you see, so he would have to be very, very accurate or very lucky to get it exactly in the right place. You know, so you didn't realize is that oh, you in your wings you had few holes here or in your fuselage, you see,
and they'd just be patched, would they?
But
they'd be patched.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah. Well, of course they would be. I mean, either when you, it would be sort of the aircraft would be pronounced unserviceable straight away, but it would be checked, you see, to make sure that nothing vital has been hit as well, and that sort of thing would be quite easy to repair the superficial damage.
Now, so that's any other types of mission? We've had the sort of escorts of bombers, we've had the shipping protection, and we've got the fighter sweeps. Any other types?
Yes, we are also sent on, and I don't know actually what they're called now, we are also sent on missions where we tried to get the enemy aircraft up. So we would fly very low over the channel, say towards Le Havre, really so 2-3 meters up over the thing, the whole squadron, and then I suppose 5 miles or so from the coast, you would suddenly start climbing, you see, and you would climb on full power to about 20,000-25,000 feet, and then you would wait for somebody to turn up, you see, and quite often, control from England, they would tell you yes, there are some bandits over Rouen, you see, they're at 30,000 feet, or there are some bandits somewhere else, you see, then you would know where to go, and what they would send you there, you see, or you would just go there and see what happens, whether you can, but it was quite often very difficult to find anybody at that thing, you see. So we quite liked these things. There was not, but it was pure fighting, really. I mean, you did meet somebody. It was you knew what you were expected to do, and you knew what was happening, and it's not that sort of somebody could shoot you from the ground, you see. No. Although you did see people. We did see sort of akak from the ground, so things bursting here and there around you. But usually, so 100 or 200 or 200 feet, you could just see the burst of things. But there was no.
And would you meet much German? Would you actually manage to make contact?
If you met them, you usually made contact. Actually, yes, unless they. Try to fly away, sort of towards middle of front, and you wouldn't be chasing there because you wanted to make sure that you were enough petrol to get back again, you see, because by that time, you see, you were 200 miles at least, or more than that, 250 miles or 250 miles away from your base, you see, so you wanted to make sure that you got enough petrol to get back again to Northolt, or at least to the south shore, you see.
Now, did you have any defensive duties defending, well, England? Were the Germans not sending things across?
They were sending things across, yes. And the defensive duties actually were you were actually in readiness. By that I mean that you had to stay at the aerodrome. So if it was announced, so you had to stay in the mess, such as mess or of this mess. You couldn't be in your barracks, you see, and then so that if they suddenly wanted you, you'd then have to go to the dispersal point.
Now, did they actually have the scramble? I mean, you know.
Yes. Now,
what was the scramble?
But when it came to a scramble, it was a different story. That you were usually in sort of immediate readiness, which means that your aircraft was ready, refueled, and just waiting for you to jump in. And you were also ready, except for your parachute, you see. But you had your flag suit right, what you would be flying in. And you had your May West on, so that all you had to do is to, if they say sort of scramble, you run to your aircraft, hopped into the cockpit, you see there, and the mechanic would give you the straps and all that, you see, help you a bit to get the things do a quick check on your radio and this and that, and not even that, and start the engine and off you went in sections again. You see, that was scramble. You see, where they either expected something or they already knew that, and that was all right because we didn't mind that. You just sat in the. In the dispersal point, you're usually playing cards or chess or whatever. It's not waiting for something or read.
And would it be German fighters or German bombers or either
well,
or?
It could be both. In fact, it could be German fighters. It could be German bombers.
Would you be scrambled at night? I mean, would this go on?
No. We were not a night squadron. No. We would not be scrambled at night. No.
And did you ever manage to intercept them? I mean, would you normally be successful in intercepting?
But as far as I'm concerned, on these scrambles I've been up, we've never met anybody. Others have, but not me. Not the ones that flew right up to the sort of French coast or something. Not just of myself, but the whole section or the squadron, you see, and then back again. Sorry, we didn't meet anybody, and back again.
So those would be the sort of missions, operational duties. What would you be? What was life like when you weren't, you know, on a mission? Well, I mean, what was a typical day like for you?
Well, you still would have ordinary training flights with your squadron because there were new pilots always coming in. Replacing the old boys, all the ones that have been, once you've been gone for 6 or 8 months or so, or less than that, I mean, four, five, 6 months, then you would be replaced. You see, you would go on what they called rest. You see, and then another pilot would take your place. I mean, the one that would take your place could be experienced or could be just a fresh job from an OTU, so that they would have to be trained as well. You see, so there was always training flights in during the life of a squadron. You see, not just operational flights. So And you see, when we were at Northolt, there were always three squadrons based at Northolt, and not all of them were. They were all operational, but not all of them would be say would be wanted that one particular day. For some sort of operation, you see.
Now, what was your accommodation like? Let's start with that. I mean, what were your living conditions? What were you in? Huts or what?
Yeah, when I was a sergeant pilot or flight sergeant, whatever, in Northolt, or anywhere else, it is of nice and hearts with you either had, say, 10 to a portion of a Nissen hut, and you had your own bed and your own little thing, you see. To a little wardrobe or whatever, you see, to the bedside table, you see, there. And your next chap would be 4 or 5 meters away there with his own sort of thing. That would have been in a sergeant's accommodation, you see, there. Now, and then there, of course, there was a bathroom, and you could have a bath or wash in the shade. Now that, you see, there's no, that's quite.
And what was the food like?
Food was good. If anything, we were pampered.
What would you get?
The food, I mean, was food was good. Well, all these sort of things that you. But nutritionally, they made sure that all the minerals and vitamins, so they were all there. Food was good. I must say, there was no. I mean, there wasn't a gourmet food, but it was nutritious and it was good, actually. Yes, and we also had sort of thing, which sometimes we felt a bit guilty, because I remember at Northolt, for instance, we had oranges and bananas. And where normally your populace couldn't, normally people outside, they couldn't get them. Because that was not even on ration, you see. But we got it because we were operational pilots, you see. So you felt a bit sort of, not so much guilty, you see, but... So there, you felt a bit sorry for the others, or some kids, you see, that lived in Risley Prison, they didn't have it, you see, but you had it, you see.
Now, how did you get on with the other pilots? And I mean,
it was a great character. I didn't know sort of like, I don't remember any sort of frictions, really. It was all kind of a car.
Any particular pals?
But
any particular friends?
not. I can't really say any particular friends, to be quite frank with you. In every squadron, you see, you had people that you were very friendly with, and people that you were friendly with. You see, but you didn't have any sort of. Well, I don't even have any enemies, you see, sir. I don't like this chap, you see.
Were most of you NCOs, sergeants?
Well, no, the squadron was more or less half and half.
Pilots, sorry, sergeants the pilots. And officers.
Yes. About half and half, I would have thought. You'd have, out of 30 pilots, you see, in the squadron, you would certainly have 15 or 18 officers, and the rest were.
Was there any difference in how you got on with the sergeants and the officers?
No.
Did you have the same mess?
But no, we were not in the same mess, no, because officers were in the officers' mess, you see, and the sergeants were in the sergeants' mess, you see. But you would come and have a drink with them, you see, in the sergeants' mess, or they could come and have a drink with us. No,
were you on first name terms with them?
Oh, yes.
Oh, sorry, it wasn't formal at all?
No, it wasn't formal.
What was the sergeant's mess like? What did it offer you?
Well, bloody cheap drinks, that I know that. I mean, it was a different sort of, well, that's what they drink, you see, so you had a whiskey or gin or beer.
Did you drink much at the time?
Not really. No, you didn't drink, so get really, 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 really sloshed, you see. Because there was always, you would only do it in the evening, you see. That's one thing. And secondly, you were likely to have to fly again next year, or more than likely, if the weather was right. So you didn't get to.
You wouldn't want a hangover, in other words.
Well, you had a hangover now and then, you see. But I don't remember.
But it would be dangerous in the air.
Oh, of course it would be. Yes, of course it would be. Yes, yes. Most of us, I think, were quite aware of the fact that this is no, that you're not only you also have responsibility to your friends. You see, not just, especially if you were leading a section or something. You see, that's not just yourself. So there's no, they're quite sort of soberly.
Were there games and things in the mess? I mean, you know, darts or chess or whatever.
Darts, yes. You played snooker. I was quite good at snooker at one stage. It's all gone now. And tennis.
And what about going out? Would you go out into the village, or I'm not sure it's a village or a town?
Yes. Well, when going out, you would go out to a pub. Yes, pub. You see, when it came to Northolt, our sort of pub was the Orchard Hotel in Ruislip, you see now.
You go to Ruislip?
That was the, virtually, I think, the nearest. Perhaps it wasn't the nearest pub, but it was the pub that.
Now, tell me about what was that pub like? The Orchard, you say?
The Orchard, yes. Yes. It's still there.
What did you like about it? What was good about it?
Well, the atmosphere actually was quite nice there, and the old chap who owned it was a certain Mr. Ansel. He was very, very friendly towards us, and whenever we came in, and if the squadron or had some sort of success rate that day, he would produce a drinks on the house, you see, and
you got a friendly reception from the locals.
Yes. We had a very friendly reception from there, and in spite of, say, when it came to Northolt, there were only Poles there. There was nobody else.
What, all three squadrons?
All this was all Polish squadrons. Yes.
How did you get on with the local civilians generally? You know, because I mean,
so right, there's no. We didn't really have all that much contact, this because you didn't. The only contact that you had was they were telling you, "Oh, we watched you take off yesterday, or we watched you come back yesterday, or whatever." But you see, you mainly lived on the premises of the area station. You see.
So the only time you'd see them was in the pub, basically.
Well, it was in the pub. You saw them sometimes.
And they were friendly.
Yeah. Oh yes. Of course they were friendly. Yes. I don't remember any sort of animosity. You see.